Yeah, but they can if you're a criminal. They definitely were sent to pick me up, or us. I didn't think fast enough. I should have asked to see a warrant or something. They'd just invoke Homeland Security. But how could they? Homeland Security didn't know where we were. I hadn't talked to the DHS woman for 2 minutes before the goddamned cops showed up. Though maybe 2 minutes would be enough, if we were on the right list. She got up and split the remaining coffee between us. Maybe it was someone else in the DHS. They're not just one woman with a phone up in Illinois. Yeah, and it may not have been Homeland Security business at all. Maybe the guy who sold me the gun ratted on me. Yeah, she said, glowering theatrically. Ya shoulda plugged the sumbitch. Next time, Muggsy. We both laughed. 4. We dozed till noon and then picked up a cheap cell at a convenience store next to the motel, just to make 2 calls. Didn't want our families to worry enough to call the authorities. All we needed was state troopers from Iowa to Mississippi sharing their databases, looking for us as missing persons. From researching my first novel, I knew how to engage a proxy cell host to make it look like we were calling from New Orleans. It wouldn't fool a government agency, or the enemy, presumably, but it would cover our tracks on the domestic front. Dad wasn't home, so I left a message saying Kit and I were leaving the New Orleans heat on a road trip up to New England. Kit's father answered, and she improvised a little, saying that we'd probably visit an uncle up in Maine, verifying his address. Didn't know when we'd get there. She'd be in touch. I checked my email one last time, and there was a note from my agent saying, "Hey, no big rush, but DuQuest wants to know how the monster story is coming along." "Let's get into Mississippi," I said. "Find a place in the middle of nowhere and stay for at least a day. I'll write up another little chapter."
"And maybe print it out?" she said.
"Yeah, if we find a place." I was getting nervous, too, not having a paper copy. I did email the manuscript to myself every couple of days, but the dime store computer's word processing program was Neolithic and had a small mind of its own. I eased the thing shut and for about the 1,000th time regretted not spending a few bucks more for a machine that could talk to a thumb drive or something. I'd mailed a paper copy home when we first got to New Orleans, but I was at least 30 pages past that now, and had made changes in the earlier chapters as well.
"Should you call the Underwood woman or somebody?"
I wasn't sure. "Maybe not. Let's see what happens if we don't make it easy for them." "But maybe..."
"Maybe what?"
I opened the phone and contemplated it. "We've got $9,000-some. Enough to go maybe 9 months?"
"I think so," she said.
"Living simply, under the grid, with no emergencies." "Still not enough." "Let me call my agent, see if she can wire us another 10 grand or so." She was with another client, but called back in a couple of minutes. I told her I was in a real jam, a legal problem I was advised not to tell anybody about.
10 grand, she said. "Jack, if I had $10,000 to spare, it would go to the rent on this goddamn place. I'm way overextended."
"It's really serious."
"Life or death?"
"I think it could get there."
"Want me to try your movie guy, Ronald DuQuest? He's got millions and I can pretend he owes me a favor."
I said sure. Hooray for Hollywood. DuQuest told her he'd consider it an additional advance against the movie rights. Pretty generous, considering that 10 grand was all he'd actually paid anyhow. He took a penny away for some IRS thing and deposited $9,999 in my PayPal account. I couldn't exactly shake the computer until the cash came out, but it would stay there until we needed it. Once in Key West, I could use nested firewall proxies and retrieve at least 80% of it without leaving any trail. Outside the motel room, I gleefully stomped the cheap phone and bundled its mortal remains with our trash and tossed it in the parking lot dumpster. Pure paranoia. There was no way the enemy could have put a tap on a random phone from a convenience store, but could our benevolent government? Every phone in every cheesy little store? Could the enemy know everything the government did? I could worry about it, or I could get a new phone next week. Chapter 11. Hunter slept for 20 hours and awoke around midnight, pale lunar light filtering through drapes. The warm trailer still had a stale smell of roasting meat. Sharp sweat tang. He had a painful small erection which he couldn't see over the mound of his belly. He pulled on it until it emptied and lay thinking, calculating. There was enough meat in the freezer for about 10 days of his normal diet. 2 weeks if he stretched it, but he knew if he got too hungry he might do careless things. The woman's purse held enough money for months of food. 5 or 6 sides of beef. The idea of non-human meat turned his stomach now, but when he was hungry enough, he would eat anything. Anything animal. The closest he could come to a vegetarian diet would be eating vegetarians. Which he had probably done. Not Ms. Cooper. Out of curiosity, he had squeezed out the contents of her large intestine, and could see that she had been a meat-eater. Too little fiber in her diet. It would have killed her one day, much more slowly. What had he lived on before he came to Earth? His dentition was similar to a human's, though presumably a dentist could tell he was different. He could crack bones with his molars, and his jaws were strong enough to tear apart humans and other animals. Clothing was sometimes too durable. He could break a tooth on a zipper or bra clasp. Though it was peculiarly satisfying to tear into people through their clothing, and it made the remains look more like an animal attack. But his little talks with them were probably more interesting when they were naked. They were more frightened, which made them taste better. He knew the Chinese would beat dogs before they butchered them, partly to tenderize the muscle, but also for the endocrine tang of fear. When he had taken humans by surprise, killed them without warning, their flesh had been relatively bland. Much better to play with them for a while, and let ductless glands work their magic. The taste of hope, and the loss of hope. Thinking made him hungry. In the back of the refrigerator, he had a pair of hands in a large jar of dill pickle juice. He fished one out and had it with bread and butter, gnawing around the small female bones. Then he threw the bones into the stock pot simmering on the stove. The pot had enough evidence to hang him 4 times over in this state. He would ask that they do it without the hood. He wanted to see their faces when he plunged through the trap door and hung there alive, smiling at the end of the tether. He grinned and picked bits of Ms. Cooper from between his teeth. 5. Kit quietly closed the top of the computer. Maybe let's not have breakfast. Oh, come on, it's not that bad. Okay, just don't order a hand sandwich. Or finger food? Seriously, don't tell me that scene's going to be in the movie. I guess not, I admitted. Wrong genre. No chainsaws or goalie masks. But the book has to go a little further than the movie. So what does he eat in the movie? Well, that particular scene isn't in it. Later on, he ladles a spoonful of broth and sips it. She smiled. That's a distinction. You're grosser than Ron Duquest. I shrugged. Different medium. Besides, you want to be over the top on the first draft. Easier to cut stuff than to add it. She nodded microscopically, not looking at me.
Yeah, you explained that.
Storm signals. It bothers you that I would even think of such horrible things. She didn't say anything for a couple of seconds, lower lip between her teeth.
Really, it's all right. You've seen worse, I keep forgetting.
I tried not to think of yards of intestine unspooled across a dusty road. The owner festering in a ditch, arms wide in dumb supplication. Why was that so close to the surface? She put her hand over mine.
If you want to talk about it, we could.
Actually, we couldn't. There was no vocabulary. Smell, heat, pain, always the edge of nausea. Just the smell of diesel exhaust made me clench my teeth. The somatic memory of it back behind the sinuses. Shit burning in diesel. Rot. The buzz of fat flies. Mud spatter, blood-soaking desert sand. The guy had looked like a Matthew Brady daguerreotype. Mouth open in dark, bloated features. The second dead man I had seen, but the first had only been a dusty bundle.
Honey? You want to lie down?
Actually, I wanted a drink, but maybe I'd better not say that.
Nah, get some chow.
She smiled.
Okay, soldier. Make a mile first?
Check the map.
I unfolded it and found our motel.
There was the Burger King across the way, but nothing else on the map for about 20 miles.
Let's see what they've got across the street.
If it's hands, we go someplace else.
Deal.
We rolled up yesterday's clothes and repacked the bicycles in about a minute. The air was cool and clean, and if it had been just me, I would have gone on down the road. But if she doesn't have breakfast, she turns into something dangerous. So we crossed to the monarch of mediocrity. In truth, Burger King wasn't half as bad as McDonald's. I got 3 little hamburgers and fries while she had some egg thing. On impulse, I asked for a salad. The high school girl behind the counter acted like I had asked for a human hand. Would you like guts with that? She wrinkled her nose and said it was breakfast time. Hamburger, sure. Salad, no. There was something weirdly satisfying about hamburgers for breakfast. Some would disagree. Kit made a face when I squirted mustard and ketchup on them.
Caveman, she said.
Og-like meat. Meat with blood and the yellow stuff.
Your internal clock is off. Hamburgers and fries?
I suppose. Actually, she knew I didn't like regular breakfasts unless I fixed them myself. Eggs completely dead. No evidence of their actual origin, which isn't all that appetizing if you think about it.
Og, not eat that.